Okay, so I want to talk tonight a little bit about the halachos of Yom Kippur. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about the halachos of sukkahs, you know, specifically building a sukkah, because I think that's probably more nogea right now than some of the other halachos. Maybe those we'll talk about next week. So we'll start with Erev Yom Kippur. So we discussed, we didn't discuss it this year, but there is a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. The mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. It's an interesting mitzvah. Generally, we have mitzvahs to eat on Shabbos, on Yom Tov. We have a mitzvah to have a Suda. We have a mitzvah to have Lech HaMishnah, Kiddush. You know, obviously, Pesach is perhaps the most well-known. We have mitzvahs to eat matzah and Dalot Kosos and Maror. But it's not very common that on a weekday, you know, a regular weekday, we have a mitzvah to eat. It's learned out from the Gemara. The Gemara derives it from a pasuk, the Yinisim es nafsho seichem b'sisha lachodesh, on the ninth of the month. And the Gemara says, what do you mean the ninth? You're not afflicting yourself. You're not fasting on the ninth of the month. You're fasting on the tenth of the month. So why does the Torah say the ninth of the month? So the Gemara says it has a very enigmatic statement that we see from here that one who eats on the ninth, it's as if he fasted on the ninth and the tenth. If one eats on the ninth, it's as if he fasted on the 9th and the 10th. Obviously, the 10th being Yom Kippur. Very strange statement. What does that mean? How does that work? The Mishnah Berurah seems to explain that what it means is that whenever we have a mitzvah to eat, we're not getting that much schar. Right? If we have a mitzvah to eat a Shabbos Suda, so of course we get schar for fulfilling that mitzvah, but we're not getting truckloads of schar for having a nice Shabbos Suda with warm chalent and delicious chicken and potato kugel. You know, we're going to get schar because it's a mitzvah, but it's, you know, in the end of the day, it makes us feel good. It's enjoyable. So we're not going to get a tremendous amount of schar for that. Mitzvahs that are difficult, such as fasting, we get a lot of schar for. And if a person fasts on Yom Kippur, it's difficult, it's challenging. So for that, we get a lot of schar. The fum tzara agra, Chazal tell us, right? Depending on the level of pain, that's the level of gain. The more discomfort and challenge, the more schar we're going to get. So the Mishnah Berurah says that when the Torah explains v'inisem es nafsho seichem, the Torah tells us that you have to afflict yourself, and it refers to eating in the form of affliction. So we learn that basically Hashem is giving us reward for the eating as though we're fasting. So we get like double points, you know. It's like the credit card. You know, you get two times rewards for groceries. So here for eating, you get double rewards. You don't just get the regular reward for eating. You get a reward for eating as though you were fasting. Okay. Now, why do we have to eat? So there's different reasons given. Very interesting reasons given by the Rishonim. So Rashi in the Gemara says something very practical that essentially the Torah was concerned about our well-being. So the Torah wants us to be able to fast well on Yom Kippur. The Torah wants us to be able to do tshuva properly on Yom Kippur. And therefore, we have a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur to ensure that we're going into the fast well prepared. We're going into the fast as well sustained and prepared as we can be. And that way, we'll fast better on Yom Kippur. We'll do tshuva better on Yom Kippur. And that's the reasoning behind this mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur.
Fast 3-4 times during the
right day. So Erev Yom Kippur is one of the days when they don't. That's one of the 4 days when they don't. Right. You know, the 2 days, Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, the 2 days, Shabbos and Erev Yom Kippur. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons given. Another reason, interesting, a couple of the reasons given by the Rabbeinu Yonah. So Rabbeinu Yonah says, he says that perhaps the Suda is really because of the Simcha that Yom Kippur is here. You have such a tremendous simcha that Yom Kippur is here, that finally we get a kapara, we get to atone for our sins. It's a tremendous simcha, so we have to have a seuda. And then he offers a second reason, which is along the same lines, and he writes, every yontif, you have a sudas mitzvah. Shabbos, you have a sudos mitzvah. On yontif, you have a sudas mitzvah. So Yom Kippur, also you need a sudas mitzvah. Now, you can't have a sudas mitzvah on Yom Kippur because it's a fast day. So the sudas mitzvah is pushed up to Erev Yom Kippur. But really, that's the sudas mitzvah for Yom Kippur. Okay, whatever the reason might be, but there is a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. Some of the poskim discuss is, do you fulfill this mitzvah if you walk around all day with sucking candies? you know, or chewing gum. You know, I'm walking around all day munching on something, you know. So most poskim say that's not what we're talking about. You know, we're talking about to really eat, not to just have like a sucking candy in your mouth all day. There's also a discussion about the night before. When does this mitzvah to eat start? Does the mitzvah to eat only start on Erev Yom Kippur? Or does it start on, does it start the night before? So there's a discussion about that, you know, whether it starts the night before or not. It might be dependent on whether we treat Erev Yom Kippur as a yontif, which we'll see in a minute, that there are certain elements of Erev Yom Kippur that we treat as a yontif. We know we minimize the slichos. We don't say as many slichos as we do throughout the entire Aser Simei Tshuva pre-Rosh Hashanah period. You know, the fewest amount of slichos are said on Erev Yom Kippur. We don't say tachanun. You know, there's certain halachos where we treat Erev Yom Kippur almost like a yontif. And because of that, maybe that's a reason that one should already begin eating the night before. And some make the argument that it's not the case. It seems that the simple understanding is that the mitzvah is only to eat that day. I was discussing this with some of my students at school, so one of them suggested a very nice suggestion. He said it might depend on how you understand what the reason for the mitzvah is. What's the reason for the mitzvah of eating? If the reason for the mitzvah of eating is just to prepare myself for the fast, so that shouldn't apply. That should not apply the night before. And whatever I eat the night before, by the time I wake up in the morning, I'm going to be hungry again. I've digested all the food, so that should apply only the day before Yom Kippur, when I can really prepare my body to fast well. But if we say that the mitzvah is because it's a sudas mitzvah, or in anticipation, you know, the simcha in anticipation of the kapara of Yom Kippur, so that could start with the halachic day that really starts at night. So it might actually depend on how you understand the reason for the mitzvah. That might dictate whether there's a mitzvah to eat the night before or not. But be it as it may, we do have a mitzvah certainly to eat on the day of Erev Yom Kippur. Some actually have a minhag to have an established, like a real seuda, in addition to the suda mafsekes. Right, suda mafsekes we'll talk about in a minute. Everybody has a suda mafsekes closer to the fast. But in addition to that, some have the practice to have a real suda, like a real washing meal, you know, where you wash and you have hamotzi earlier in the day. I know when I was in yeshiva, that's what they did. They had a meal, you know, earlier in the day, like around before lunchtime, you know, usually because everything's pushed up a little earlier because it's Erev Yom Kippur. So like, you know, usually like 11 o'clock in the morning, they would have a sit-down meal with bread and, you know, you wash a real meal. And then later you have a Suda Mafsekes as it gets closer to the day of Yom Kippur. Okay. In davening, we have certain things that we do a little bit differently. We do not recite Mizmor Lesoda. This is one of the two times a year on a weekday where we do not recite Mizmor Lesoda. One of the other one is Pesach, right? Erev Pesach and then Chol HaMoed Pesach. We don't recite Mizmor Lesoda. The reason is that we would not bring a carbon. We wouldn't bring a carbon toda on Erev Pesach, Chol HaMoed Pesach, because part of the carbon toda was chametz, and you couldn't eat chametz obviously on Pesach. So any carbon that you could not consume, the entire carbon, by the time that it would expire, you wouldn't be able to bring that carbon. So Erev Pesach and Chol HaMoed Pesach, you could not bring a carbon toda. And Erev Yom Kippur, you were not permitted to bring a carbon toda, because there's no way you could finish the carbon toda at like 40 loaves of bread. There's no way that you could finish that by the time Yom Kippur begins. So therefore, Erev Yom Kippur, no carbon toda was brought. And that's why we do not say Mizmor Lesoda on Erev Yom Kippur. We do not recite Avinu Malkeinu. And we do not recite Tachanun. And again, the reason is because it's a little bit of a yontiv. We do not recite Lamnatzeach for the same reason. So we see that we treat Erev Yom Kippur a little bit like a yontiv. There is a minhag to do kaparos. We know the minhag to do kaparos for a long time was with chickens. I had to take a chicken, and they have a whole formula that you say, and you wave it above your head three times. The idea behind these kaparos was almost like a karban, right? Just like a karban. You would bring the animal, and the idea is that I'm slaughtering this animal in place of myself. Really, I deserve, because of my sins, I deserve to be slaughtered on the Mizbeach. But, you know, thank God, because of Hashem's mercy, He's not requiring that. But in His place, we're going to offer this sacrifice, this karban, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in place of me. So the idea of kaparos is like that idea. It's not obviously not a karban, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, but it's like that idea that we, or so to speak, transfer our sins to this chicken, and then the chicken is shechted, and then the chicken is given to tzedakah. Right? That's what we do with the chicken. We don't keep it for ourselves, but we give it to aniyim so they can eat. So that way, we're mekayim a little bit of tzedakah. Also in Erev Yom Kippur, and this is an age old custom. Already in the Shulchan Aruch, there's a very strong debate as to whether this is a good custom or not a good custom. Exactly. Some said it was a good custom. The Mechaber was very against it, and he felt that this was midarkei ha'emori, this is like what the pagans do. It's not something that we should be involved in. He was very against it. The Ramah said, it's not such a big deal. You know, this is an age-old custom. It's okay. You can keep it. And that's why many still today do kaparos with a chicken. You walk in Eretz Yisrael, it's like all over the place. You know, I imagine Borough Park, it's probably all over the place. I remember when I was in Yeshiva, my Yeshiva was in Mea Shearim, so we just walked one block over. There was a slaughterhouse there, a shlachtois, and you do kaparos, and you give it to the shochet, and he shechts it right in front of you. And in fact, the only time in my life I was zochet to do the mitzvah of kisoy hadam. There's a mitzvah that when you shecht an animal and there's blood on the ground, so you take dirt and you cover the blood. It's a mitzvah of kisoy hadam. You make a bracha on it. I never did that. It's the only time I did that mitzvah was in the context of kaparos. So,
like chicken, you don't do like
gasses,
do you?
Yeah, no, but I never was at a shechita of gasses, and I probably never will.
But gasses, you don't do it. I don't think.
What, kisoy hadam?
Yeah, I think it's only by
ifis. Could be. I don't remember. But either way, I'm not going to be at a shechita of gasses. I'm not. I don't think my stomach can handle that. Chickens were enough. Chickens were enough. But so there is a minhag of kaparos. People do it. Some people, you know, don't have the minhag to do it. Some people are uncomfortable doing it. You know, it's some people get a little squeamish, you know, waving a chicken over their head. But if you don't do it with a chicken, that's fine. You should still do it. And you can do it with money. That's another minhag. You know, some people do it with fish, but you can also do it with money. And I grew up as a child doing it with money. You know, you take some money and you do the same thing. You know, you wave it over your head and give the money to tzedakah. So that's so if you're not doing it with a chicken, at least do it with money and give that money to tzedakah. We do have the practice, the Shulchan Aruch brings it, that we ask mechila from people in Erev Yom Kippur, right? We should mean it, right? When we ask mechila, it shouldn't just be like a request by rote. You know, we send out a mass text to our whole address book, you know, please be mechila me for anything I've done. That's not very sincere. But, you know, especially if there's somebody that we know, you know, we had some dispute with, or we had a disagreement with. You know, Erev Yom Kippur is a good time to make amends, to make up, and to ask mechila from the person, and hopefully they'll grant mechila. In fact, right in Tefillah Zaka, which is the tefillah that's said right before Kol Nidre. You know, if you look in the Machzorim, there's a long tefillah right before Kol Nidre. Some of it only pertains to men, but much of it pertains to men and women. And it's a very nice tefillah to say. Unfortunately, many of us don't get a chance to say it because we're rushing into Kol Nidre. You know, so maybe we say a couple paragraphs, but it's really a nice thing to say if you have, you know, a few minutes before Kol Nidre to say it. So in Tefillah Zaka, there's actually a paragraph where we recite that we're mochel everyone b'lev shalom, wholeheartedly. We're mochel everyone. And it's a very nice idea that really, you know, to really mean it, to say that, you know, verbally, I hereby am mochel everyone who may have done anything to me. You know, we don't want to be the cause for anybody getting some sort of a harsh decree, a harsh punishment on Yom Kippur because they wronged us and we forgot about it, we weren't mochel them or whatever the case might be. So it's a good idea. We should ask mechila, we should grant mechila. Erev Yom Kippur is a very nice day to make amends and to make up with people. At Mincha we know, we daven Mincha early, we do recite Vidui at Mincha. The reason why we recite Vidui at Mincha is because, you know, we're kind of nervous. We don't want, you know, and the Gemara talks about, we're nervous that people are going to die before Yom Kippur. You know, you never know. A person never knows when they're going to go. So, you know, to wait the Yom Kippur to say Vidui, you know, we're a little too nervous for that. So therefore, we say it Erev Yom Kippur at Mincha. At least we'll get one Vidui, and just in case something happens, you know, especially the Seuda is coming later. The Gemara talks about a person might choke at the Seuda. You know, you choke on an umtza, you know, you choke on a bone. So you never know what can happen. So therefore, at Mincha, we say a vidui. We say it's a regular tefillah, just at the end of Shemoneh Esrei, we say vidui. When we say vidui, we're supposed to be standing, so a person should not be leaning on anything, even if you're davening near a shtender or near the shulchan. You know, you shouldn't be leaning on it with your full strength, that if it's removed, you'll fall. You should still be standing, but we do bow our heads a little bit in submission as we say vidui. After Mincha, we eat the Suda Mafsekes. The Suda Mafsekes is not like the Suda Mafsekes when it comes to Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, there are a lot of halachos. You can't eat, two cooked foods and, bread and ashes, everything like that. That's all for Tisha B'Av. That's because of the morning. Here, the Suda Mafsekes is a totally different meal. It's just to prepare for the fast. We generally wash at the Suda Mafsekes. Obviously, even, I mean, now it's Erev Shabbos, but even if it wasn't Erev Shabbos during the week, we generally try to wash at the Suda Mafsekes, have bread, it's a real Suda, have some sort of meat or chicken, you know, something kleshik, should be a real Suda to prepare for the fast. And then you can eat whatever you want. You know, some people make a nice meal and they use china, and it's like almost like a Shabbos meal, which is, again, going back to those ideas of the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur, it ties into that this, you know, this is almost like a Sudas Yontif, this Suda Mafsekes. And then, but you know, even after we bench, technically you can eat and drink until it gets close to Shkia, which we'll talk about in a minute. Some of the poskim say that it's a good thing to do before you bench, just to either to think or even better to verbalize that I'm not yet accepting the fast. You know, just by me benching, I'm not yet accepting the fast. I want to still eat and drink until it gets close to Shkia. If a person did not do that, you can still eat and drink. It's not benching is not necessarily an automatic acceptance of the fast, but they recommend that if you can, it's a good thing to do. We do have a mitzvah of Tosefes Yom Kippur. We're supposed to add onto the Kedusha of Yom Kippur, just like we have a mitzvah of Tosefes Shabbos. So we have a mitzvah of Tosefes Yom Kippur. In fact, you know, the Rambam seems to say maybe that it's only by Yom Kippur. That's where we learn it from. And therefore, a person should really not, you know, cut it down to the wire. You know, don't take your eating and drinking down to the wire, down to Shkia, besides for the fact that you don't want to chas v'shalom end up eating on Yom Kippur. But also, you know, you have to get this Tosefes Yom Kippurim. So a couple of minutes, doesn't have to be a half hour, but a couple of minutes, you know, 3 minutes, 5 minutes before Shkia, already we should be not eating, not drinking, treating it as Yom Kippur to add on a little bit to the Kedusha.
Could you do it on the other end?
Should do both. Should do both. Tosefes goes on both ends. An extra 5 minutes is not gonna kill us. Yeah.
Supposed to eat extra or just a normal meal?
Whatever you need to sustain yourself. So, you know, don't make yourself sick. You know, sometimes people walk into Yom Kippur, it's like, you know, they're like, you know, they're ready to keel over. You know, besides for that, they have to go to the bathroom 10 times during Kol Nidre because they drank so much. But, you know, it's, you know, whatever you need to sustain yourself. There's no halacha in terms of the amount.
You have to have 2 hours?
No. Good question. Somebody else asked me that. There's no requirement of Lecha Mishnah. It's not Shabbos. Lecha Mishnah is only for Shabbos and Yom Tov. It's not Shabbos, even though we treat it maybe like a little bit of a Yom Tov, but it's not to the point of Lecha Mishnah. Yeah, you should wash. It's a real suda.
You said benching is just
regular benching. Yeah. Regular benching. It's not Yom Kippur yet. It's still Erev Yom Kippur. There is also a halacha I forgot to mention. There is also a halacha that it seems to be a minhag that men don't eat real dairy. On Erev Yom Kippur. It's an interesting minhag. You know why that is. Some say that, you know, whatever. It's an interesting minhag, the reasons of why that might be. But there is a minhag that men don't eat real dairy on Erev Yom Kippur. You know, if you need a little bit for your coffee or something like that. Dairy, like cheese, meat, you know, cheese, milk, things like that, yogurt. There is a minhag.
You shouldn't have pizza
on the whole day. It seems that there is a minhag, yeah, there is a minhag like that. Again, if it's not like a halacha that if you, you know, you know, if it's it, but there is a minhag. It's brought in the it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch.
Makes you tired.
Yeah, there's other reasons given also, but it's. I'm sorry. Yeah, right. We do have a lot of restrictions this time of year in terms of, you know, what we eat and what we don't eat, but there is a minhag like that not to eat dairy. In terms of also Erev Yom Kippur. So women, when they light candles, they make a shechianu at candle lighting, right? A shechianu for the yontif. So they make a shechianu at candle lighting. It's very important, though, that generally we know that women accept Shabbos or Yom Tov when they light candles. When they light candles, they're generally accepting Shabbos and Yom Tov. The one exception to that is if they make a tanai, if they make a condition before they light and they say, listen, you know, I still have to finish cooking, I still have to jump in the shower, whatever I have to do. So I'm making a condition, stipulation that I'm not accepting Shabbos with this candle lighting, so then they don't accept Shabbos with their candle lighting. So Erev Yom Kippur is very common because many women like to come to shul for Kol Nidre. So even women who never come to shul Friday night, but Kol Nidre, they like to come to shul. So many women will light candles at home and they'll make and they want to make it tonight that they're not accepting the Kiddusha of Yom Kippur yet because they want to drive to shul. You know, if they're walking, that's fine, but if they want to drive, so that they have to make it tonight. So it's very important. If a woman's making a tanai and she's driving to shul, she should not say shechianu at candle lighting. Because once you say shechianu, for Yom Kippur, Shechiyana v'kiyimana v'giyana l'azman hazeh, there's no greater Kabbalas, you know, Yontif, Kabbalas Yom Kippur than that. So if she's planning to drive, she should not be making Shechiyanu at candle lighting. She should just light candles, make the regular, you know, the regular bracha without Shechiyanu, and then she'll make a Shechiyanu in shul. We all make a Shechiyanu in shul before Maariv, so she'll make a Shechiyanu with everybody else in shul at that time. If a woman is not being, you know, not doing any malacha afterwards, she's either walking to shul or she's not going to shul or whatever it is. So then she can light candles, except Yontif, and make a Shechiyanu during candle lighting like everyone else. But yeah. Okay, right. So it's a good question. But Chazal, and that's why technically Chazal said that really, you know, generally we assume Hadlakas Neiros is a Kabbalas, you know, Yontif. However, since since lighting candles by definition is an Erev Shabbos or Erev Yontif Mitzvah, I'm not allowed to light candles on Shabbos and Yontif. So by definition, the lighting of the candles is really an Erev Shabbos, you know, Mitzvah or Erev Yontif Mitzvah, in honor of the coming Shabbos. So therefore, you know, for men, it's not, men who light candles, for example, there's no automatic Kabbalah Shabbos or Kabbalah Yontif with lighting candles. And women, you know, Chazal instituted this option of the Tanai that you can, you know, opt out of the Kabbalah Shabbos.
So why can't you opt out of the
Because Shechiyanu is, meaning Lahadlik Ner Shel Yontif, what I'm saying is that I'm lighting a candle in the honor of Yontif. So that can still happen even before it's actually Yontif. But if I'm saying the words Shechiyanu v'kiyimanu v'giyanu l'azman hazeh, what I'm saying is right now is that time. But you can't say l'azman hazeh and intend that the Yontif is coming.
The bracha of Hadlakas Neiros is on the Maisa of lighting candles. The bracha of Shechiyanu is not on the Maisa of lighting candles.
It's on the Kedusha Sayyam, exactly.
So
it's on the Zman.
If you say Shechiyanu, you're being the Kabbalah Yontif or whatever other...
Right.
So they'll make it in shul,
exactly. They'll make it in shul.
So if it's on the mice of lighting the candles, right, then why do women cover their eyes when they light the candles?
Okay, so that's a good question. Yeah, that's a whole different shear. It's a good question why they cover their eyes. It's not very simple, but...
I'm asking why they cover their eyes. I'm asking, if you're saying that lighting the candles is not being the Kabbal Shabbos...
Right.
Exactly right.
So generally with women, we assume that their lighting candles is a Kabbalah Shabbos, right? Generally we assume that. But it's not, that's only because that's the way that women usher Shabbos in, right? If a man lights candles, that's not an automatic acceptance of Shabbos. But it's not because the lighting of the candles per se, you know, something intrinsically about lighting candles ushers Shabbos in. It's because that's the way generally women bring Shabbos in, is by lighting candles. It's de facto that's the way it is. So that's why we have the whole over lasiyas and quandary, and you know why they cover their eyes. But again, it's just something that developed, that since this is the way women usher Shabbos in, so therefore it's a Kabbalah Shabbos.
So if they have it tonight, do they have to cover their eyes?
Technically, if they're making it tonight, they're not being Mekabel Shabbos, then no. Then technically they could make the bracha and then light the candles. But no one does that. The minhag is that even if a woman makes a tanai, she does it in the normal way. There's an interesting question about Yontif, because Yontif, you're allowed to light, meaning if you have a lit match,
right,
you're allowed to light a candle from that match. Right? You're allowed to transfer a fire. Right. So there are those women who, when they light candles on Yontif, don't do the whole covering their eyes thing. They make the bracha, and then they have a lit match in their hand or a lit candle or whatever, they make a bracha, and then they light the candles. Right, which is what a man does. Right? If a man lights Shabbos candles, that's what he does. He doesn't do this whole thing. Right? He makes the bracha, and then he lights, because for him it's not a Kabbalah Shabbos. So. Okay. So that's it. That's more or less in terms of Erev Yom Kippur. It's interesting. The halacha bring, the post can bring that it's good to cover the table with a tablecloth, even though obviously we're not eating on Yom Kippur. But it's nice, just like on Shabbos. The halacha is, you know, supposed to have the table covered at all times, not just while you're eating, but it's, you know, supposed to have a tablecloth on the table, the covered Shabbos. So they say so too for Yom Kippur. And obviously this year it's also Shabbos, but even without that, it is something nice for Yom Kippur to out of the covered of Yom Kippur to have a tablecloth. we wear nice clothing again. Obviously, this year it's Kol Shekein, it's Kal V'chomer because it's Shabbos. So we have the issue also. Many have the custom to wear white. We have a minhag to wear, you know, married men have a minhag to wear a kittel. Some women wear white. Many women have different customs in terms of, you know, cosmetics and jewelry. A lot of women don't wear any cosmetics going into Yom Kippur. Don't wear jewelry, you know, because it's not the time to be all dressed up. It's the time to do tshuva and to daven. So many women have that custom. It's, again, these are just customs. Whatever particular woman's custom is fine. Malacha, and again this year, yeah.
Can a man wear, let's say, like this, and then you not to wear gold and stuff like that? So
right.
It's
interesting. I never thought about that. I guess according to the minhag, maybe it's better not to. According to that minhag, not to wear gold. Maybe it's better not to. If it's a real gold watch, you know. But yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's a minhagim. It's minhagim. Yeah, it's not aser. It's certainly not aser. Okay. In terms of the Issa Malacha, so again, this year it's Shabbos, so obviously it's really a moot point, but in general, there is an Issa Malacha on Yom Kippur, just like a regular Shabbos. Even if Yom Kippur falls down on Tuesday, it's a regular Issa Malacha, just like on Shabbos. Obviously, we know the main halacha of Yom Kippur is you know, not eating or drinking. We have a requirement to fast from, like I said, a few minutes before Shkia until after Yom Kippur. You know, anybody who thinks they might have an issue with that should, you know, speak to their doctor and a rabbi in advance of Yom Kippur and not wait for Yom Kippur. But generally, we don't ingest any amount of liquid or food. We don't. There's an issur rechitza. We don't wash any part of the body on Yom Kippur. So this is similar to Tisha B'Av, which we discussed not long ago. And obviously, when you wake up in the morning for Negel Vasser, so you have to wash your hands, but we only wash until the knuckles, right, where the fingers meet the palm. And we explained this when we spoke about it on Tisha B'Av. The reason why that's okay is because one of the reasons why we wash in the morning, in addition to preparing ourselves for davening and, you know, cleaning ourselves, but an additional reason is to remove any ruach ra, you know, evil spirits that we say, kind of concentrate on our hands while we're sleeping or when we wake up. And technically, those evil spirits, whatever the ruach ra is, we assume is on our fingers. So therefore, technically, just washing until the knuckles really would work every day. But since if we tell someone, if Chazal had told people that you have to wash until your knuckles, what would they do? They would wash, you know, halfway to the knuckles. So they know that people don't really listen to what they say. So therefore, they said you have to wash until the wrist. So that way they know, okay, you're washing until the wrist, you'll certainly get the knuckles. But Yom Kippur, where we can't play any games because it's an Issur Rechitza, so therefore they said, you know, just wash until the knuckles, make sure you wash until there, and no more. When a person uses the restroom, the same thing applies. You can wash your hands until the knuckles. Obviously, any part, and this again is the same thing as Tisha B'Av, any part of the body that got dirty. So if a person, it's raining outside and you slipped and you fell, and you fell smack into the mud, and now you have mud all over your arm, you're allowed to wash the mud off your arm. Right? You're not allowed to you can't jump in the shower and wash your whole body, but that part of your body that got dirty, you can wash that part of your body. If you're changing a baby's diaper and your hand over here gets dirty, you can wash that part of your hand, just that part to get the dirt off. The Issur Rechitza applies to one's mouth as well, and that's why we can't rinse out our mouth. This is the same thing with Tisha B'Av as well. Other fast days, you know, many poskim are more lenient to rinse out our mouth and, you know, brush teeth and things like that on minor fast days. But on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, where there's an Issur Rechitza, not just you can't drink, but you can't wash yourself. So washing yourself means washing my arm or washing my mouth. So I can't wash my mouth either. That's why we can't, no brushing teeth or using mouthwash, rinsing one's mouth. None of that can be done on Yom Kippur. Brush your teeth right before Yontiv, and it'll be okay. Nobody talks to you too much anyways on Yom Kippur, so you should be fine. We don't apply any oils, lotions, etc. Even deodorant, the poskim are not excited about on Yom Kippur because it's sicha, right? It's considered anointing oneself. So again, you know, you'll take a shower out of Yom Kippur and, you know, load up on the deodorant, and you should be, you know, you're not running the marathon on Yom Kippur, so you should be fine. And sure, we'll try to keep it cool here, and you should be okay. We don't wear leather shoes. Other leather items are permissible. Obviously, you can wear a leather belt or whatever. We don't wear leather shoes. But any non-leather shoe is okay, even if it's comfortable. You know, sometimes you have, you know, Crocs are very comfortable, and other things like that, which are made out of rubber or synthetic materials, are certainly fine. We don't engage in any marital relations on Yom Kippur. Because of that, the poskim say also a couple shouldn't touch on the night of Yom Kippur. We don't say that there's all the harchakos of Hilchos Nida, but a couple shouldn't touch or sleep in the same bed either, because that can lead to relations, and we want to avoid that. Motzai Yom Kippur, before Motzai Yom Kippur. In terms of fasting, two things I wanted to mention. On other fast days, many poskim are lenient with women who are pregnant or women who are nursing, right? Women who are pregnant and women who are nursing, and many poskim on the minor fast days, and even Tisha B'Av were a little bit more machmir, but certainly the minor fast days, you know, many poskim just say if you're pregnant or nursing, you know, you don't have to fast at all. That's the joke, that in some of the, you know, very frum communities, the women go like, you know, 20 years without fasting because they're always either pregnant or nursing. So you know, that's the but when it comes to Tisha B'Av, we're more machmir, and when it comes to obviously Yom Kippur, which is Midoraisa, we're much more machmir, and that's why pregnant women absolutely have to fast, nursing women have to fast, and it's, you know, it might not be easy, but you know, they should try to prepare themselves in advance. Obviously, there are extenuating circumstances, and a person who's not well, and the obstetrician says that they absolutely cannot fast, so then they should discuss it with a rav. But just a blanket, you know, heter for pregnant women does not exist on Yom Kippur. I remember, I mean, it's you know, post can write this, that even if it means a husband staying home, you know, because sometimes it's, you know, the wife's pregnant and she has little kids at home and she can't watch everybody, so that's fine. So, you know, the post can write. So, the husband should stay home from shul. Don't go to shul on Yom Kippur, right? There's more of a requirement for your wife to fast, that's midoraisa, than for you to daven with a minion. So you'll daven by yourself. You daven at home, you take a machzor, and you'll daven Yom Kippur at home, and you'll help out with the kids. So, you know, the post can take it very seriously, you know, with not just chas v'shalom, you know, issue any sort of blanket heter for women who are pregnant. So before we get to Havdalah, a couple other interesting halachos of the day of Yom Kippur. So one interesting thing is that we know that we have a requirement to make 100 brachos a day, right? So we know that during the times, you know, of David HaMelech, there was a terrible plague, and 100 people a day, 100 people were dying each and every day. And David got up and he made a takana that everyone should make 100 brachos a day, and the plague stopped. And since then, you know, we were careful to make 100 brachos a day. Generally, it's not that hard to make 100 brachos a day. Between the three Shmona Esrei that we daven, and tefillah, and all the eating that we do, and Asher Yatzars, and, you know, usually we're fine, and we're well over 100 brachos. You know, even on Shabbos, we usually have 100 brachos. Yom Kippur is a little more challenging, because Yom Kippur, we're not eating, right? So we don't make any brachos on any food. So Yom Kippur is a little bit trickier. The post can say you should have in mind, you know, maybe when the Shliach Tzibur says the brachos for the Haftorah, when the people get aliyos and they make a bracha, you should have in mind, say amen, maybe that will count for you. You know, some people have a practice of passing around, you know, different types of besamim on the day, you know, smelling salts and other things that they make a borim and besamim on, you know, to increase their brachos. But it's something, you know, we try to stay cognizant of, to try to get 100 brachos. Again, you know, you can't eat, but to try to get 100 brachos, if possible. During the break, many shuls have a break. Our shul usually has a little bit of a break. So the question always arises about making the bracha on the talis when you put it back on. So if you take your talis off, you know, at the beginning of the break, and now the break's over, I want to put my talis back on, do I have to make a new bracha? So the big discussion in the poskim about this, you know, is that considered hesach hadas? When I take it off, I intended I'm going to put it back on soon. So what's the halacha when it comes to that? So generally what I tell people, and this is based on what I received from my rav, is that if your talis is off for an hour, that's considered a significant break. That's hesach hadas, and then you have to make a new bracha. So, since in most cases the break is longer than an hour, at least in our shul it is. So, if you take your talis off for a full hour, so then you would have to make a new bracha when you put it back on after the break. Okay. Yeah.
Let's say go
out on Hatzalah call.
Right,
yeah.
So that's real hesach hadas. So, I mean, even if it's only 10 minutes, so
right,
you have to.
Again, if you are going on a Hatzalah call and you have no idea when you're going to get back, and you're just right, taking off your talis, and that's it, it's off, you know? Right. So then I would say, yeah, you know, you assume you're taking it off and you don't know what's doing, and then, you know, when you get back, you make a new bracha. I think that's a valid point. Okay, when it comes to Havdalah, Havdalah on Motzai Yom Kippur, so again, this year it's a little different because it's Motzai Shabbos also, but let's talk about first a regular Motzai Yom Kippur, which is not Shabbos. So we do make a Havdalah, we don't make a Besamim, right? Because Besamim is just for Shabbos, for the Neshama Yisera, and the Neshama Yisera leaving us on Motzai Shabbos. So we don't make Besamim on a regular year. We just make regular Havdalah. Interestingly, we do make a Borei Me'orei Ha'esh. But it's a different Borei Me'orei Ha'esh than the Borei Me'orei Ha'esh that we make on Motzai Shabbos. Not a different bracha. The bracha is the same, but the reason is different. On Motzai Shabbos, we make Borei Me'orei Ha'esh because we have a Mesorah that fire was first discovered on Motzai Shabbos. Fire was first discovered on Motzai Shabbos, so we make it on Motzai Shabbos. It's a special Birchas HaShevach that we make on as part of Havdalah on Motzai Shabbos. Also, we didn't use fire the whole Shabbos, but really, it's a fire was discovered during that time. When it comes to Yom Kippur, there's a different reason why we make a Borei Me'orei Ha'esh, and that is that Yom Kippur, if you think about it, is the only Yontif where you're not allowed to cook. Right, every Yontif you're allowed to use fire, you're allowed to cook. Yom Kippur is the only Yontif where you're not allowed to use fire. So because Yom Kippur is the Yontif where you're not allowed to use fire, so therefore Chazal instituted a special bracha on fire on Motzai Shabbos, because now we can use fire once again. Okay? The only problem is that that because that's the nature of the bracha, Chazal required that the candle upon which you make the Borei Me'orei Ha'esh must be lit the entire Yom Kippur. Must be lit the entire Yom Kippur. Why? Because then this candle was lit the whole Yom Kippur, and I couldn't use it, because I'm not allowed to cook, and I'm not allowed to do malacha on Yom Kippur. And now it's Motzai Yom Kippur. Now I can use the fire that was lit, so now I make a bracha on that fire. Okay? So that's what we call a ner sheshavas. Right? We require this candle to be there, just resting the whole Yom Kippur. And that halacha is very serious halacha. In fact, the post can say that if you don't have a ner sheshavas, you skip it. You skip the bracha. Right? You don't make a Borei Me'orei Ha'esh. You can't light a candle and make a Borei Me'orei Ha'esh. There's even a discussion if you're allowed to take the ner sheshavas and light a Havdalah candle. And many posts can say you shouldn't. Right? Don't light a Havdalah candle. You don't need multiple wicks and everything like that. Forget it. Just make it on that one candle that remained lit. So that's the halacha when it comes to regular year Yom Kippur. Now, one interesting thing, and very important, is that you should make sure not to make the Borei Me'orei Ha'esh on a Yahrzeit candle. Okay, many people light Yahrzeit candles, because we put Yizkor on Yom Kippur. So you should not make it on a Yahrzeit candle. Why not? Because a Yahrzeit candle is not lit to provide light. A Yahrzeit candle is lit in honor of the deceased, in honor of the neshama. So it's considered that it's lit for kavod and not for light. In order to make the bracha Borei Me'orei Ha'esh, the candle must be lit to provide light. And therefore you cannot make the bracha on a Yahrzeit candle. Now, you can use those candles that say Yahrzeit candle on it, right? You can use that type of a candle, but it can't be one that you lit in honor of your mother, father, bubby, whatever.
Could you use it as a Ner Sheshavas?
What?
The Yahrzeit candle. No,
you shouldn't. You shouldn't. Right? You shouldn't. You should have a separate candle. Meaning, so let's say a person is saying Yisker for two people.
Right.
So they want to light two Yahrzeit candles on before Yom Kippur. So they light two Yahrzeit candles. You should light a third Yahrzeit candle, not as a Yahrzeit candle, but as a Ner Sheshavas. An additional candle, you should be lit for the purpose of making Havdalah, an additional candle, right? They're cheap. An additional candle should be lit. Put it off to the side. Have the Yahrzeit candles in one place and put this in a different place. Or you can say, this candle is the Ner Sheshavas.
That particular candle happens to have gone out.
So it's a problem. You cannot make it on the others, right? You don't make the bracha. You could borrow an Ner Sheshavas from your neighbor if you want, but you don't. But otherwise, you don't make the bracha on that. So this year, where it's Shabbos, we're not as strict because it's Motzoi Shabbos. You don't need a Ner Sheshavas technically. The Mishavura says the minhag still is to try to have an Ner Sheshavas, even though it's Motzai Shabbos. But certainly under the circumstances, if you don't have an Ner Sheshavas, your Ner Sheshavas went out, or you forgot to light one, so certainly this year you can still make a Borei Me'orei Ha'esh, because it is still a regular Motzai Shabbos. So this year is a little bit different.
If you have an Ner Sheshavas, then you should
light the Havdalah candle? It's not necessary. Yeah, you can. We're a little bit more lenient this year because it is Motzai Shabbos, but you don't have to. It's not necessary. Correct. Yeah, the concept of multiple wicks is not a chiyuv. It's a hiddur. We try. It's a nice thing to try to have multiple wicks. It's an avuka. It's a more significant fire, but it's not a chiyuv. Yeah. Yeah.
The shul.
Yeah.
Can we light a yahrzeit? It's not being lit for yahrzeit.
Right.
To be used
for the ner sheshavas. Yes.
Okay, next question. On the our
memorial to the 6 million.
Right.
On top, it's a little spot there for candlelight.
Okay.
If we put, we usually don't.
Okay.
But if we put the yardside candle up there.
Yeah.
With the intention that it's the yardside candle to be used for the Haggadah.
Right.
Because that can be okay. Or if it goes up there, it's a yardside candle for 6 million.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't put it there. Because once you're putting it there, you're ready, you know, you're ready, you're saying that it's for cover, you know. Yeah, yeah. This year we could be a little bit more lenient, but yeah.
What was in your
diet?
Because you're not cooking, not using your fire.
This is the reason why Chazal instituted a bracha Bore Meorei HaEsh on Motzai Yom Kippur. Right? You don't have the reason of Motzai Shabbos on Motzai Yom Kippur. So why is there a Meorei HaEsh at all? Correct, but on Motzai Shabbos you have the additional reason that fire was discovered.
So this year can you just light a candle?
So this year you can. You can.
You don't need that there.
Could technically you can, but the Mishnah Berurah writes the minhag still, even though it's Motzai Shabbos, you should try to still have an Erev Shabbos. Yeah, that's what the Mishnah Berurah says the minhag is. But technically it's not required. You know, certainly if you don't have it or it went out, you could just light a candle this year because it is Motzai Shabbos. Now, by the way, it's interesting. We generally don't make a Borei Minei B'Samim, right? So the poskim say that even on Motzai Shabbos, we still don't make a Borei Minei B'Samim. Why? Because, you know, the Neshama Yisera didn't need the whole Shabbos. You know? So the Neshama Yisera didn't really enjoy itself this Yom Kippur Shabbos. So therefore, you don't make it's not the same pain of the Neshama Yisera leaving on Motzai Shabbos. And therefore, even this year, we generally do not make a Borei Minei B'Samim after Yom Kippur. There are some who do, but generally we don't.
And you can't make Havdalah for a fast day, no? Because you didn't eat?
No? I'm sorry?
No, I thought you weren't allowed to make Havdalah after a fast.
You can't. We have to make Havdalah after Yom Kippur. Yeah. No, maybe you're thinking of Tisha B'Av that falls on Motzai Shabbos. If Tisha B'Av falls on Motzai Shabbos, we don't make Havdalah until Sunday night. Maybe that's what you're thinking of. Yeah, but Yom Kippur, we do make Havdalah afterwards. Obviously a very important part of Havdalah is that we can't eat on Motzoi Yom Kippur before we make Havdalah. Right? That's a general requirement. Motzoi Shabbos also, but Motzoi Yom Kippur, we don't eat before we make Havdalah. You can do Malacha after you say Atachon Antanu, or you say Baruch HaMavdu Ben Kodesh L'chol, you're allowed to do Malacha at that point. But in terms of eating, you really have to wait until Havdalah. So that's why, you know, the men should, after Kiddush Levana, they should run home so that they can make Havdalah quickly for their wives and so the wives can eat.
So Baruch HaMavdu is not good?
Not for food, right? It works for Malacha, but not for food.
So people who wait till Tuesday to make Havdalah, they don't eat the
feeling. I don't know. I still remember the first year I was married, I davened in a very frum shul, and they davened Mariv on Motzai Yom Kippur. They didn't start Mariv till about 72 minutes after Shkia. Okay, so it was like, so by the time we got home, it was like a half hour after Rabbeinu Tam. You know, so let's just say my wife, you know, Baruch Hashem, she had a lot of patience for me, and it was Motzai Yom Kippur, so she didn't want to get upset. But she was quite hungry.
First year.
So since then, I've thought about this a little more. But one important thing is that the halacha when it comes to Havdalah is that you are allowed to drink water before making Havdalah. You're allowed to drink water before making Havdalah. So technically, a woman, once she says Baruch HaMavdil, she can drink water. So she can break her fast on water. She just can't eat anything until Havdalah.
Can she make Havdalah for herself?
Can she make Havdalah for herself? Can she make Havdalah for herself? Yeah, if she has to. She can make Havdalah for herself. Generally, it's a question if on Shabbos, Motzai Shabbos, if a woman is mechuyeves at all in Havdalah, because it's a mitzvah saseh shazman graba, but it might be included in Shabbos, so it could be Yom Kippur. I'm not sure what the application to Yom Kippur is. But she can. I mean, even on Shabbos, if she has to.
There's only a question if she can be motzi people.
No. Even if she should make it, they say, because she's making a bracha.
But I'm saying, but if there's no chiyuv, she could still make it.
It's not so simple. Not so simple.
Well, she's making the whatever bracha she's making out of ma'aseh. She's not making it on.
Yeah, but if she's not, mechuyeves, so then what? You know, what's she doing? She's making brachas, and they're not required. But if she, I spoke about it in Hilchos Shabbos. Yeah. So I'm not sure of the application exactly to Hilchos Yom Kippurim, but certainly, even on Motzai Shabbos, if a woman has to, she can make her own Hagolah. We try to say a woman should hear Havdalah from a man, you know, because of that issue, she might not be Chayavis, but if she has to, she certainly can. So if you have a situation where a woman's plotzing Motzai Yom Kippur, and her husband's at one of these minyanim that starts Mariv, you know, 72 minutes after Shkia, so then, you know, if she has to, she can make her own Havdalah, and she can eat. If that's necessary. Okay, we'll have to stop here. We'll talk about Sukkot Smirtz Hashem next week.